And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week, the Indian election is on our minds, so we turn to one of India's most celebrated writers, Arundhati Roy. She's famous not only for her best-selling novel, A God of Small Things, but also for her outspoken political activism against India's power structure, including the newly elected Hindu Nationalist Party. Steve Paulson recently sat down with Roy to talk about how she sees her role as a writer and activist.
Arundhati, you seem to occupy a unique place in world literature. You're a celebrated novelist, winner of the Booker Prize in 1998 for The God of Small Things, which became an international sensation. But since then, all of your published writing, as far as I'm aware, has been nonfiction, has been very political. Do you see your work as a novelist and all this other work that you've been doing as an activist as totally different, or are they related in some way?
Well, what happened in India very soon, I mean, just after my book came out and I won the Booker Prize, it was at a time when India was looking to position itself as this new emerging superpower. And I was claimed not so much for my book as for the prize that I won as, you know, a person who had been recognized in the international arena. I think within a few months of the Booker Prize, which had me on the cover of every magazine and so on, the Indian government conducted these nuclear tests. And suddenly there was this horrible, ugly, nationalistic, almost fascist rhetoric, you know. Honestly, it was like suddenly everybody had a large dose of Viagra or something. And I saw that even artists and writers and actors and everybody was claiming these nuclear tests with great pride.
Because this was sort of this moment when India had become a nuclear power, right? This historical moment.
And all of this combined to make me feel very, very uncomfortable. And also, since I was on this national stage, I realized that keeping quiet about it was as political as saying anything. So that's when I wrote the first essay called The End of Imagination, which, of course, had people just kick me off the pedestal of being the sort of fairy queen. And then they were like, get out of India and all of that.
So you were no longer the darling of Indian letters.
Just overnight, I was no longer the darling. In the last 10 or 12 years, what has happened is that the political work, the political writing I've done has been urgent and interventionist, you know. So I've been trying to sort of blow open a space that's closing in on people. So that urgency, the immediacy of having to intervene is different from fiction. You know, once I wrote The End of Imagination, I sort of declared myself as a person who wasn't frightened of being in trouble.
And also, I mean, you've been a very outspoken activist on a number of issues. I mean, you've already mentioned the nuclear testing. You've been a critic of Indian nationalism, of globalization, of a series of big dams being built in India. Is there an underlying set of values for you that brings all of these things together? I mean, is there a vision of society that you were advocating that you think we don't have, we're missing?
Absolutely. I mean, what I'm talking about is really, in the battle between power and powerlessness, how do you resist? What are the tactics you employ? In India, for instance, there is such a huge bandwidth of resistance against the push of, let's say, these major mining corporations to take over the lands of millions of people. Really, the battle is how do you redefine the meaning of human happiness and fulfillment? How do we learn that what we are fighting for is not making us happy? It's not doing anything for us.
Is this a critique of, I guess, what you might call the idea of progress in the modern
world? Absolutely. That is at the heart of it. You know, we need to redefine what we mean by progress, what we mean by civilization, what we mean by development. You know, today, the measure of progress is almost synonymous with your levels of consumption, which is psychotic. It's crazy.
Well, I want to bring this back to your own personal story. And I guess I'm wondering, as you talk about these various political issues, these problems that, that are not only in India, but around the world, were you aware of all of this when you were growing up? I mean, were you a political child?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't a political child, in that I didn't grow up in a family that had a deep political understanding. And yet, as in the God of Small Things, you know, Kerala was at the time, when I was growing up, it seemed the revolution was just around the corner. But I grew up on the outside of a very, very traditional community, a very conservative community, a very landed community who looked at us as sort of outcasts, and, you know.
Why were you considered an outcast?
Well, because my mother had married outside the community, then was divorced. You know, she didn't have any money and all of that. So you grew up sort of asking yourself questions. I'm not schooled in the normal ways of politics or anything. You know, much of my political writing is almost trying to explain to myself what's going on. It's not just preaching to other people.
How much of this comes from your perspective growing up as a girl in a traditional community? I mean, it sounds like part of what you're saying is that you didn't want to fulfill the traditional female role that was expected of you.
Sure. I grew up as a girl in a community where my mother was very, very unorthodox because of what she had been through. So she was not exactly putting pressure on me to be like the other girls, you know. But I was so sure that I wasn't going to get married to some local boy there with a dowry. But she and my mother and I also had a lot of conflict. So I actually ran away from home when I was 16, 17. And I was studying architecture in Delhi. But
So studying architecture, not fiction.
No, I'm an architect. Yeah, yeah.
When did fiction enter your life?
Fiction entered my life long ago, but I knew that, at least I thought that I could never, ever earn a living, writing. So I was very desperate to study something where I could support myself financially and never be dependent on anybody and so on. So that's one of the reasons I studied architecture.
Is there a connection between your architectural background and your fictional writing? Do you sort of bring the imagination of an architect to how you construct a novel?
Absolutely, I do. I think not just a novel, but even all my political writing. I think structure is everything, in a way. How you tell a story is as important as the story, because, you know, the stories of love and fear and war and terror and childhood, stories have been told, you know. None of us are all that unique, however much we are told that we are great individuals and, you know, all that. But how you tell a story, how you reveal it, you know, and even in the political writing that I do, I think all of those skills are put to use in how you unpack something or how you present something or how you look at something, you know.
So you don't really see a sharp distinction between what you do as a novelist and what you do in your more explicitly political writing?
I do. The difference, I think, is the difference of playing, you know, of having the space to play when you're writing fiction. When I'm writing nonfiction, it's an intervention where you're sort of surgically going into a chaotic political situation and saying, look, let's just open this up and say, what the hell are you all talking about? Whereas in fiction, there's so much dance and so much play and so much love and irony. And in India, for example, when you're writing politically, irony is a real problem.
What can great literature do to help to create this better world that you've been talking about? Or can it? I mean, is that the job of what literature is about?
I would never be one of those to specify, you know, what the job of literature is. You know, I think literature should be free to do what it wants. So I would not prescribe a role for literature.
You would
literature.
Not prescribe a more
never,
political role in literature.
I would not prescribe any role for literature. But obviously, when I say I don't prescribe a role, I think that all literature is political, even a fairy tale. I mean, no writer can hide behind their words. There are writers who I think are just, you know, their politics really sucks, but they're beautiful writers. You know, so you can't deny the beauty of that too.
Now, the first thing that every journalist who writes about you says is, you wrote this amazing book, this novel, The God of Small Things, back in the late 90s. Why haven't you written another novel? Are you working on one?
Yes, I am, actually. But when I wrote The God of Small Things, I already knew that there was no way that I was going to write another book very soon. Because I don't see myself as some, you know, novel-producing factory. I don't see the point of writing, you know, 100 novels. For me, The God of Small Things was something which had been marinating for a long time. And I'm not a very ambitious person. I'm not somebody who necessarily, you know, wants to be remembered or wants to win some big prize or something. I would like to, as I once said, sort of eat mangoes in the moonlight and be a bit irresponsible.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Arundhati Roy is the author of the Booker Prize-winning novel, The God of Small Things. If you'd like to hear more, you'll find Steve's complete uncut interview with Roy on our website at ttbook.org.